Support for this program by the Alaska Native Heritage Center. Experience more than 10,000 years of history and culture through art, dance, film, and more. Exploring your home state is the COVID-safe way to enjoy the summer.
Welcome to Native America Calling. From Albuquerque, I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A totem pole by the House of Tears Carvers from the Lummi Nation offers a powerful message to the Biden administration and to the nation. It's a reminder of the fragile safeguards in place for many Native sacred sites. They include Bears Ears, Chaco Canyon, and many others that are under pressure for development. Coming up this hour, we'll hear about the totem gifted to elected officials and the continued advocacy for sacred site protection. We'll be right back.
This is National Native News. I'm Trip Kraus, in for Antonia Gonzalez. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency says more drilling fluid has been released along the Line 3 oil pipeline project than previously reported. Minnesota Public Radio reported that between June 8th and August 5th, there were 28 releases at 12 river crossing locations. The drilling fluid is not considered toxic, but could impact water life. A treaty rights attorney has filed a lawsuit against Enbridge's Line 3 project in White Earth Nation Tribal Court, and the lead plaintiff is Wild Rice. The lawsuit lists the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources as a defendant, and Manuman, or Wild Rice, several White Earth tribal members and Line 3 protesters as plaintiffs. The lawsuit alleges that the state of Minnesota is failing to protect the state's waters, is endangering the crop, and violating tribal members' treaty rights to harvest it. Line 3 begins in Alberta and clips a corner of North Dakota before crossing through northern Minnesota to Superior, Wisconsin, and the Enbridge Terminal. Earlier this summer, a South Dakota working group developed proposed K-12 standards for education in the state. The Forum News Service reported that more than 40 South Dakota teachers and experts suggested requirements intended to boost the understanding of Native Americans for South Dakota students. But the South Dakota's Department of Education released standards that changed those recommendations, removing or diluting focus on Indigenous history, according to the news service. The standards will face four public hearings beginning in September. This fall, Salish Kootenai College on the Flathead Reservation is welcoming its first class of nursing students to an expanded four-year program. The program is now the nation's only four-year tribal program. Taylor Stagner with Yellowstone Public Radio News has more.
The new four-year program has over 100 students enroll in the fall semester. The college's two-year program had been around for decades. There were long wait lists, and so the administration decided to create an expanded program with a less restrictive admissions process. Sandra Boham is the president of the Salish Kootenai College. She says the program's focus on cultural sensitivity when serving Indigenous communities is what sets it apart from other programs.
And that understanding, we know that every tribe is unique and distinct, but it's training your eye to look for that, and to look at how you're delivering care and listen to what people are saying or not saying, or how they're saying it, and catching those cultural cues.
Boham says since Indigenous people are more likely to be affected by the COVID-19 pandemic, the need for culturally sensitive workers providing care is more important than ever. For National Native News, I'm Taylor Stagner.
The state of Maine will transfer ownership of a 3.2-acre parcel of land located in Medibems back to the Passamaquoddy tribe. The land is located on Passamaquoddy ancestral lands and was used to travel by canoe for millennia. The Penobscot Nation plans to take its case and claim to water rights against the state of Maine to the U.S. Supreme Court. The Penobscot and the state of Maine are at odds over who has the power to regulate water quality and sustenance fishing on the Penobscot River. For nearly a decade, the tribe argued in court that it had the right to regulate fishing, boating, and other recreation on the river. However, in a 3-2 en banc decision in July, the First Circuit Court of Appeals ruled against the Penobscot Nation, saying that the river belongs to the state and not the tribe. The tribe now plans to petition the U.S. Supreme Court to hear the case. At its annual meeting, the American Bar Association's policymaking body voted in favor of a resolution to support an Interior Department investigation into federal boarding schools. The resolution supports legislation that would create a federal commission to investigate and document the schools. professional basketball player LeBron James will produce a Native American basketball film for Netflix. Rose Bowl will explore basketball in the Navajo Nation Reservation. Dene filmmaker Sydney Freeland will direct the sports drama, as well as co-write with Reservation Dogs co-creator Sterling Harjo. For National Native News, I'm Trip Krause.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
This reminder to get your COVID-19 vaccination is provided by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, who support this show. Info at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus. Support by BNSF Railway, proudly supporting the nation's economy by moving the goods that feed, supply, and power communities across the country. More at bnsf.com/tribal relations.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Lummi carvers, tribal leaders, and members of grassroots groups delivered a totem pole to the Biden administration. This summer, they went on a cross-country journey called the Red Road to D.C. They stopped at various locations along the way to highlight indigenous issues and sacred site protection. They're expressing unity as tribal leaders and grassroots members call on the Biden administration for policies to protect Native sacred places. The House of Tears Carvers of the Lummi Nation's Totem Pole is being featured in Washington, D.C. Today, we're going to talk with a carver and some grassroots groups which welcome the Totem Pole to areas they hold sacred and are working to protect. We also want to hear from you. Did you see the Totem Pole? Maybe you followed the journey online. What sacred areas would you like to see protected? Give us a call. Our number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Joining us now for the show, our Lummi carver, Jewel James. Welcome to Native America Calling.
Hello, I'm glad to be here.
Reyes DeVore, welcome to Native America Calling. You're the Community Programming Director with the Pueblo Action Alliance.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for welcoming me.
And CEO of Indian Collective, Nick Tilson. Welcome to Native America Calling.
Thanks for having me on the show.
And Jewel, can you go ahead and kick us off this hour and talk about the totem pole, its creation?
Well, it began with a couple of the Get Out to Vote Native American activists, Fred Elaine here from the Lummi Reservation and Teresa Sheldon from the Tulalip Reservation. Both of them served on their tribal councils, and they approached me right after the elections, and their statement was that the Native American Get Out to Vote project was extremely successful, and as a consequence, very influential on swinging the vote, and which resulted in Biden becoming president. And so they wanted to plan a totem pole journey where we would go out and travel across the country and bring a message to the administration itself. So we end up working with a national committee ad hoc pulled together to get the log, start designing the log, carving the log, but also planning on what the message will be. They were very much concerned about the threats to sacred sites and also sacred waters. They're well aware of the water protectors and their massive campaigns across the country trying to save the waters for the future generations. And so I agreed to go ahead as the head carver of the House of Tears Carvers to work with them on the project. We secured a 30-foot log that was cut in half lengthwise. We got the second half, and we began to design the various images that were put on the pole. We put the full moon on top. It's a full moon round with an Indian and the moon depicted on it, which is associated with about 96 different star child myths across Indian country. And then there was a diving eagle to represent the type of leadership as well as spirituality that that Native American traditional leaders are expected to represent. Below that were two salmon representing the Chinook that are endangered. In most of the rivers up and down the Pacific coast, especially in the Columbia River and the Snake River, there was a sea wolf carved to represent both the wolves of the land and wolves of the sea, a sea bear that represented the bears of the land and bears of the sea. There was a grandmother figure that represented the grandmothers that are raising their children, their daughters, their grandchildren. The grandmother's painted red. Represent 30 million indigenous women. There was a child following the grandmother, a young girl in the same type of regalia that was using grandmother's traditional teachings to overcome generational and transgenerational trauma. And then there was a child in a cage representing the 53,000 indigenous children locked up at the U.S.-Mexico border to deny their rights and freedoms. Just because they tried to come north. Many of those were who had traditional territory up into the Colorado. And then there was a feather carved, what we call that wind dancing eagle feather. It represented David Sohappy, who is gone now, the late David Sohappy, but he was unjustly convicted for practicing his traditional fishing rights. And we wanted him exonerated. We also painted several red hands on the moon at the top, because the totem pole represents the mother teachings of indigenous peoples, and they connect us to the air, the water, the land, and natural wildlife around us.
Well, thank you for that, and for our listeners out there who haven't seen it, there's a lot of information online, and you can see photos, and you can even watch some of the videos where the totem pole went and journeyed to and stopped at different places. I want to bring in now Reyes, and you were involved in helping organize and bring the totem pole to Chaco Canyon. Share a little bit of that with us.
Yeah, thank you. Again, Native Organizers Alliance had reached out to our organization along with Dene Care, who have been working for years, to build a great, solidarity relationship to protect, the greater Chaco landscape. And, I really appreciated that they did invite us to this space, because we have been the frontline, grassroots indigenous peoples who have been really trying to, not just trying, really have been pushing the advocacy on a community member level for the protection of Greater Chaco. And the reason why it's important to protect this sacred space, a lot of people want to just term it this World Heritage Site, but it's honestly way more than that, because when both Pueblo and Diné people have a long history of, being connected to this space, since time immemorial. And what often happens with Chaco Canyon is that people term it as it's still ruins, which is not, because there are still living communities of people who live right where resource extraction is happening. And we thank, them for bringing us into this space to help advocate and let people, across, all of the states to understand and know what is happening with Chaco Canyon as it continues to be treated as a sacrifice zone, not just the area, but the community members. And the day, turned out to be a very beautiful one, because, we got to meet the Lummi carvers. We got to greet relatives that came from all over. And it was a really, beautiful day of solidarity, but also a reflection of why grassroots frontline organizing is extremely important for us to build solidarity, because you know, you need that. You know, Judith Belong from Native Organized Alliance, she was talking about relationality, you know, and we truly believe in that, building relationships and building capacity and mobilizing our people and making spaces that are intergenerational and accessible are extremely important. And as a mother, you know, as a Haymish Pueblo matriarch, I have, you know, ancestral roots to this space, you know, and that day was beautiful to have my son there with me to experience that, but also have all of our youth interns that are there with us to learn about that. And that day we also gave them time and space to speak, you know, on behalf of what Greater Chaco means to them and why we should listen to them, because they are our next leaders. And I know people say that so often, but, you know, at some point in time, you know, we have to give them also the, you know, the right and the space to advocate as well.
Thank you for that. And Nick, same thing, your grassroots group does a lot of advocacy, which includes sacred site protection. And the Lummi totem pole also stopped in the Black Hills, which is important to Lakota people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first I want to, you know, I want to thank, you know, Jewel and Doug and the House of Tears Carvers for the energy and power that they put into the totem pole and for, you know, coming to the sacred Xesapa, you know. And it was an honor to, you know, to host that here. And in our language, we call it, you know, Chomakan, our sacred. Sacred wood, sacred tree, and so, you know, for us, the thing that was powerful to us about this was that it combined our cultural and spiritual power and connected our culture and cultural and spiritual power as Indigenous people to frontline organizing and activism, and then also connecting it to, you know, bigger policy change that we want to see of how Indigenous people and our lands are treated. And I think that, you know, it was an honor to be a part of this, because I think that when we are able to bring our cultural and spiritual power to policy spaces, it helps us carry our identity, it helps us communicate our mission and our purpose back to our people and our communities for the fight and the protection of our sacred places and our sacred lands. It also gives us a way to directly speak to people in positions of power, like Secretary Howland, like this administration, of what we want to see happen and how we want to see the relationship between Indigenous people and our land change. And I think one of the themes throughout this entire totem pole journey is that, along with the fight and the protection of sacred places, we want to change the power dynamic, and we want to move to a new.
I got to jump in here real quick, Nick, because we got to take a short break, and we'll come right back to you and hear more about the totem pole. You're listening to Native America Calling. At least two high-profile athletes recently stepped away from major competitions, prompting global discussions about the personal costs of setting ambitious goals. They offer lessons for balancing life, stress, and personal sacrifice. We'll take on the topic on the next Native America Calling.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a no-charge, 24/7, confidential and anonymous domestic, dating, and sexual violence helpline for Native Americans. Help is available by calling 1-844-762-8483 or by clicking on the Chat Now icon on StrongHeartsHelpline.org. This program is supported by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Today we're talking about a Lummi totem pole and sacred site protection. We have some great guests on the line with us sharing their connection to sacred site protection, but we also want to hear from you. Did you see and follow the journey online? Is there a sacred area that you really want to get protected? We want to hear your thoughts, maybe have some questions or comments. We have our guests here. We want to hear from you. Our phone lines are open. Give us a call. Our number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And I want to welcome back our guests to the program today. We have Lummi Carver, Jewel James, Reyes DeVore with the Pueblo Action Alliance, and Nick Tilson with Indian Collective. Thank you all for joining us today. And Nick, right before the break, you were talking about why it's important that Indigenous groups connected and unified to take the message to D.C. and call on policymakers for changes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the big things that we were talking about throughout the entire journey, and that we for sure talked about when the totem pole came to the Black Hills, was about changing the relationship with the federal government so that we don't feel like we have to constantly be fighting for every single sacred site. And one of the ways to do that is to move to a new policy era of free and prior informed consent. You know, when anything impacts the lives and the lands of Indigenous people. And so, you know, that was something, as opposed to, you know, the era of consultation that we're currently in, because if we move to an era of free and prior informed consent, then, you know, companies and governments would have to get the consent of Indigenous peoples when making decisions on the lives and lands of our communities and our people. And this would inherently protect sacred sites, and it would inherently give us the ability to fight extractive industries that are destroying our lands. And so that's what was so beautiful about this whole totem pole journey, is it combined, you know, the mixture of spiritual power, grassroots organizing, and fighting for political change. And it gave us the ability as Indigenous people to say exactly what we want, you know. And, you know, we talk about that in the land back movement all the time, is that we have to say what we actually want, because we know that if we don't, the government will twist our words like they have throughout history. And so when we say land back, we're talking about land back, culture back, and taking down the systems that have perpetuated that, you know, violence against our people. So this was a great journey, you know, a great honor to be a part of this journey. And I think that all of our prayers were added to the totem pole as it went, because that's the other part of this work, right? This is organizing work, political work, but it's also culture and spiritual power work too.
And Jewel, can you explain that and the connection of the prayers and the culture and bringing this to policymakers through the totem pole, through the Lummi Nation? Go ahead, Jewel.
Well, one of the things that we're concerned about is that the original plan was to just leave Lummi and go to Snake River and Chaco Canyon and Bear Jitters and Bear Butte and Black Hills and Pipeline 3 and Pipeline 5. But we decided early back in April that's not enough, that we can't just assume that we have the power to represent Indian country, that we have, without informing Indian country, that we're trying to represent a part of their voice. So we made, we went on the road. We did what we call Red Road West first. That was a 14,350-mile journey where we went from Washington State, Oregon, California, went along the southern border of the United States down all the way to Miami, Florida. And then we cut diagonally across back to Washington State. We made about 100 stops during that part of the journey, and half of those were going throughout Washington State, so that Pacific Northwest tribes that we are affiliated with as a Salish Nation were fully informed that we're advocating the recommendations on policy positions to the administration. But we stopped at sacred sites and places, met with tribes and other groups, city officials and government officials, all along the West Coast and throughout our journey. We were trying to advocate that we need public awareness that Indian country can't do this alone, that we're going to have to influence our congressmen, we're going to have to influence the Biden administration and the various federal departments that are making some decisions about things that seriously impact Indian country. And so we actually recognized about 13 different issues that we're advocating at each one of our stops. We're concerned about the murdered and missing Indigenous women. We're concerned about the murdered and missing Indigenous children of the boarding schools. We're concerned about the recovery of the salmon population, especially the Chinook. We're concerned about the treaty rights at risk and some of the federal decisions that may actually threaten implementation of Supreme Court decisions that support our treaty rights. We're concerned about sacred sites and places and sacred waters. We're concerned about getting self-determination and self-government and the United Nations declarations on the rights of Indigenous peoples all combined into one solid long-term implementation project. We're concerned about the discovery doctrine and the need to undo the damage that it has caused to Indian country. We're concerned about getting the late David Sohap exonerated. When they convicted him, against his treaty rights and unjustly imprisoned him. And we believe his spirit needs to be put to rest, and that can only take place by his exoneration. He was a traditionalist that practiced traditional song, dance, and ceremony at traditional sacred sites on the Columbia River. So these issues we're advocating, we just wanted to make sure that Indian country was aware that they were being submitted in a letter form to Secretary of Interior Holland. We know that she has access to the president and she has access to the cabinet. And it's at those levels that we need policy changes. And if the policies aren't backed by law, that the president can implement in a more concise way that's conducive to supporting Indian country, then maybe we need to take some of these issues to Congress. But no matter what, we're hoping that by committing a lot of effort, a lot of time, and a lot of advocacy on behalf of Indian country, that we would recruit a large amount of public support. It was estimated by, Pyramid Communications that if you calculate the media releases in all the different forms that were out there that was tracking the journey, that over 342 million people were connected with the journey. It's this type of grassroots advocacy and working together in order to get our voices heard that ultimately will have an impact on the Biden administration and the Congress itself. We are planning additional journeys in the near future, and we'll be back out there. And the issue of sacred sites and sacred places isn't going to be resolved immediately, but we're not going to back off. We're going to continue to unite with church groups, environmental groups, citizens groups, Indian nations, grassroots activists, and traditional people in order to get our voices heard. So all total, we estimate that about a little over 23,000 miles of journey was done on this totem pole journey. And the media attention and the social media attention, we believe, helps connect Indian country with the pulse of the nation so that we can start changing the policies and laws that we change in order to protect these sites.
Thank you for that, Jewel. And definitely there's a lot of layers when it comes to seeking action and change and calling on lawmakers and policymakers and different people in the U.S. government, but also on the tribal level, working with tribal leaders. But the grassroots groups, youth groups have been on the front lines a lot, drawing attention to a lot of these issues. And it's grassroots work that really oftentimes gets these issues and keeps these issues in the eyes of the public, whether it's missing and murdered Indigenous people, Standing Rock or other pipeline issues, and also sacred site protection from, beyond development. Reyes, why is it that grassroots groups like yours, just talk a little bit about how the work is so important at the grassroots level?
Yeah, thank you. I mean, there are many layers to also answer that question as well, but the reason why this work is extremely important too, and the way that we carry out our work with great intention as a collective of women, femme, matriarch, two-spirit, and young people that all work on our team, we know and acknowledge that this work is bigger than all of us. We know and acknowledge that we are descendants of revolutionaries. Tuesday, August 10th, was the 341 anniversary of the Pueblo Revolt. And for years now, we have been ensuring to uplift that history. As Nick noted earlier, you know, a lot of our truths have been twisted or been erased. And therefore, when we do this work, you know, when people ask us why we do this work, you know, or they try to ask us, like, well, how we got involved with this activism, we don't call it that. We call it our life work, because we know that we come from a strong lineage of people who fought to defend our territory. We have to do that same thing in present day and for, you know, all of our future Pueblo and Indigenous relatives. And I think it really, when we say it in this way, it definitely shifts the mindset of how we do this work. You know, because what's happening among many sacred sites is, you know, this is an act of modern day genocide, you know, and our human rights are being violated every single day. Therefore, we have to take a stand against this extractive colonialism. You know, we have, you know, created different ways to engage our community members, because a lot of the time when you're trying to engage with community or trying to share, or even us, you know, coming into these spaces, learning about the policy work on a federal level, it can be intimidating. It can be intimidating in a way because the terms that are used, you know, looks like jargon to our community members and our people back at home. Therefore, our organization looks at this grassroots organizing as a key tool to help mobilize and build capacity, especially for our youth. You know, they are the ones and our future generations that have to, you know, carry out the legacy to fight against resource extraction, and it's not their place to clean it up, you know. And speaking of, you know, tribal leadership or, you know, federal government and Congress, and I heard our Auntie Deb's name shared as well, you know, and I bring her up and want to uplift her as well, because she does have a lot of work to do and that is on her shoulders. And I think we need to also remember that at the end of the day, she is our auntie, she is a Pueblo relative, and that when we have our own people in these spaces, that we need to continuously send, you know, love and support and blessings to them, because, yes, these institutions have been extremely harmful to our people, but yet, you know, in order for that to take place, you know, there, like it's been said multiple times in this conversation, there has to be collective action. There has to be spiritual support for all of our relatives. And again, I just go back to that term of relationality. You know, there's so much work to be done, but for PAA and the way that we see grassroots organizing, you know, it comes from a place of acknowledging that we are descendants of revolutionaries, and this is our life work, and we're going to continue to do it for as long as we need to.
And Nick, I wanted you to add your thoughts to that, because definitely for Indian Collective and the work that you do, it's life work. It's, you know, rights and responsibilities to be protectors. Go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to second what was shared here too. You know, I think it's important that we create narratives and messaging and connect and shorten the distance between grassroots organizing and the policy work. And I think, you know, those of us that are out here organizing in Indian Country, it's a lot of our, you know, jobs and responsibility to do that, you know, because a lot of times we, you know, our people don't understand the complexities of what it takes to move policy, you know, and we're still learning as well too, you know. because, you know, you sit down with the community, communities want their land back, you know, communities want opportunity for their people. They want to see our sacred sites protected. They want to be able to keep moving forward in our ceremonies unencumbered by the federal government. And people want to undo what has happened to our people and rebuild the spirits of our nations. And so, you know, that's why these efforts are so important. And we have to, you know, change the structural things. Because just like what was shared here, you know, we can have wonderful people sit in these different positions of power, which is key to making this happen. But we actually have to change the structural dynamic of those things, because structural racism lives within the federal government system. And that's why our people consistently are being treated the way that they are. And so, you know, representation does matter. We got people in there, but we also have to be working towards the dismantling of these systems that have been created for the purpose of stealing our lands and exploiting our people. And so I think with the combination of those things, and if we can do it with deep heart and care, we can actually begin to see things be transformed for our people. And a question, you know, one of my little brothers always talked about this in a poem one time, but he challenged us to think about the best days of our people actually in front of us and not behind us. And I always think that's a profound question to ask people throughout Indian country, because if we begin to actually believe that the best days are actually in front of us and not behind us, it actually gives us something to fight for. It gives us the ability to create new culture and new ceremonies that will catalyze our community and our people forward and build a future that the next generation can see themselves in. And so that's where I see all of the dots connecting in this work at this particular time and in this particular moment in history that we're in.
Thank you for that, Nick. Today we're talking about the Lummi Totem Pole and its journey across the country to Washington, D.C. We have some guests talking about sacred site protection. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation. Don't wait until the end of the hour. Give us a call. Our phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. What area in your community do you want protected? What sacred lands are you most concerned about? Maybe you saw the totem pole come to your area that you live in, or maybe you followed it online. What do you think? Give us a call. Again, our phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. We have to take another quick break, and we'll be right back.
Are you a Native American entrepreneur? Have a business solution for an issue like racial equity or critical infrastructure? The Indian Loan Guarantee and Insurance Program is a federal program helping private lenders make the business loan you need. They support most businesses, whether starting up or expanding. Information available by emailing dci@bia.gov. That's dci@bia.gov. The Division of Capital Investment supports this show.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. We're putting the spotlight on sacred site protection today and talking about a cross-country journey to draw awareness to the issue and also call on policymakers to help. Our phone lines are open. Our number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And we have three guests here joining us today, one of the carvers and also some members of some organizations that work daily on various issues, including sacred site protection. We do want to go to the phone lines and welcome our callers in. Let's go first to Melvin from Santee, Nebraska, listening to us on KZYK. Hello.
Hello. I would like to thank all those, your guests there, for all the time they put in trying to bring awareness to these issues. I hope they can get a meeting with Secretary Hollins to promote all these protections of our sacred site. But also, we need to do something. For me, a personal thing is our waterways, our bad shape, our creeks along the res, and including the Missouri River that is in the front yard of our reservation. We have a dam there that will be full of soot in about 7 years. And our water, we have to have water. And I'd like to see the group have something together to give Hollins, where back in the 30s, they had Citizens Conservation Corps. And they did the same, they did that. They cleaned up all the creeks, made stock dams, and did a lot of work on the environment. And we need to have that so that our young people can be hired to do this work to show how important it is. So I hope the guys can meet with Secretary Hollins and propose projects like this. So thank you, guys. Stay strong.
Thank you, Melvin, for calling us from Santee, Nebraska. We want to hear from you as well. Give us a call. Our number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And there were some members of the administration who spoke in Washington, D.C. when the totem pole was delivered. Jewel, what was some of the messages that the Biden administration delivered?
Well, you got me at a loss because when we got done with Red Road West, I became ill. I had an old wound that put my life at jeopardy. So I ended up not going on Red Road East. And so I can't answer that. The people that went on the journey are not on this phone call.
No worries. No worries. I hope you your health is getting better, and good thoughts to you and your way. And thank you so much for that. But actually, Nick, your thoughts on the administration, especially you and Rae has mentioned the importance of having Secretary Holland in the Biden administration, who has knowledge of Indian country, has lived experience. And there's also other members of the administration that are Native American and are connected to Indian country. Secretary Holland was there at the NDC when the totem pole was delivered. Go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, Secretary Holland, I think Assistant Secretary Brian Newland, I mean, there is champions in this administration. There's champions that are from Indian country who've been doing this work in Indian country. I think it's really important that we understand some of the positions they're in, too, because although they're occupying positions, you know, at the Department of Interior, they have restrictions, too, right? They have restrictions because of the laws and the system has been created. And so we have to be able to kind of roll up our sleeves and figure out how to unlock some of those restrictions, because most of these things within the federal government have actually been created as tools and mechanisms to exploit our lands. And so a lot of what, you know, folks like Secretary Holland and Brian Newland and people in these different positions are trying to roll up their sleeves to do is to try to make, you know, and salvage what is in these systems to be able to move change for our communities and for our people. And so I think that when we advocate for what we want to see, it gives them, the emboldened power to continue to do that. And it helps us kind of sharpen our spear about what that looks like. And I think the more that we also learn about the way that these systems have been created, and, you know, in a perfect world, you know, we say land back and then they return the land back to our people. Well, we got to create a pathway for that, right? We got to create a pathway, you know. And I think things like co-management and other things like that are not the end game, but they are absolutely pathways to reclaim indigenous people as the stewards of our own land. And in the process, it gets us steps closer to reclaiming, you know, political power over these lands. Because we have to remember that under the management of the federal government and how public lands in this country have been managed have contributed to climate change. They have contributed to the extreme inequalities that have existed throughout Indian country, and they have been mismanaged altogether. They have attacked the biodiversity of these places. So at the same time that we're talking about reclaiming political control of these sacred lands and sacred places, it's also for the benefit of Mother Earth and the benefit
of fighting climate change, increasing biodiversity, and fighting for equality for Indigenous people. So, you know, these things are intertwined, and I think that the administration actually does care about these things. But we have to continue to organize to apply pressure, because I think that when voting isn't enough, we have to vote, apply pressure, and keep that pressure, and also keep everybody that we elected into office accountable to the things that we're fighting for. And I think collectively, that will actually create long-lasting change for Indian country.
And Ray, is the same thing, looking at the work in the administration, having key members who are Native American in the administration, but also the work on the grassroots level and even the tribal level, just to break down any information and provide it to the community and share why the work is so important that you're doing.
Yeah, thank you. again, you know, as I had stated before, you know, one of the core parts of our work is making all of our spaces intergenerational and accessible. You know, we need to be able to, as we're talking about, you know, the complexities of the government, or we're talking about the Bureau of Land Management, or even if it's just like building solidarity, you know, this work that we do must include those intergenerational and accessible spaces of learning, so that way we can build, you know, the that liberation, you know, that we seek to have, and, you know, and exert that self-determination and sovereignty. And I think, you know, with this past year, what I also want to uplift too is that, you know, throughout the pandemic, TAA did a lot of mutual aid and community care work. And with that, we helped, you know, provide care packages to many of our Pueblo Nations, but also our unsheltered relatives. But it brought us to a place to really think about what community defense can look like. You know, a lot of our tribes had to go on lockdown to protect our people. And I bring this up because within this past year, what we also chose to also include in our mission is to not just promote cultural sustainability, but community defense, by addressing environmental and social impacts of Pueblo Indigenous communities. And what that essentially means is, like, you know, making sure that we start to really think about how we can create infrastructures, you know, as Nick was speaking to making sure that, you know, if we do get land back, you know, how are we, like, you know, how are we going to carry out that stewardship? You know, we've always had that traditional ecological knowledge to do so, but now it's different, because a lot of our water is contaminated. And I really appreciate Julia Bernal, our alliance director, that really made us think about, well, if we're talking about land back, then we need to think about, you know, the water. And so she made us think, you know, here in the Southwest, we can't have land back without water back. And what essentially has come out of that is that it's a Pueblo Indigenous feminist perspective to really think about, you know, how we can protect our water resources and how we can have and provide those solutions for water conservation in, you know, the wake of this climate crisis. And it's to reclaim all unsettled Indigenous water claims in the Southwest. Therefore, you know, the full circle to, you know, kind of answer your question here is that this work is extremely important, because we need to remember that we can, you know, exert our self-determination and sovereignty. But in order to do that, we have to be the ones to really think about what are all those smaller steps that are going to, that are needed to get us, you know, to have like liberation, to dismantle, you know, white supremacy and settler colonialism. And that's essentially what TAA is trying to do on a grassroots level.
And thank you for that, Reyes. And that's also sort of similar and mirrors Indian Collective. Is that right, Nick?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the power of grassroots organizing and getting that, you know, to make sure that what we're doing on the front line and protecting our sacred sites, that policies begin to mirror that, you know, and that, you know, building Indigenous power is is not just about creating a victory for something. It's about how we have transformed our communities in the process, and how we've, you know, decolonized our communities in the process. How have we built our power in as we fight for our land, so that we can use that collective power that we've built to catalyze our people forward? Because a lot of times people make the assumption that because we're on the front line organizing, that we're on the front line experiencing, you know, police brutality from the police, that we're just protesters. When the fact is that we're actually fighting for something, we're fighting for a future. And at the same time that we're fighting for that future, we're actually building it. You know, NDN Collective is reclaiming lands all over the Black Hills. We're in the process of creating a Osheki Shakoi Community Academy. We're in the process of creating housing for our people, serving the unsheltered, you know, and we're actively involved in those things just as much as we are actively involved in protesting on the front line. And I think that that's true throughout Indian country. And that's why Indian Collective is so focused on the work of both defending, developing, and decolonizing in Indian country by investing truly into the self-determination of Indigenous people wherever they're at throughout the Indigenous world.
And gaining the public support, what have you seen in some of these either direct actions or campaigns? What have you seen from the public, Nick?
I mean, I think that we live in a society today that a lot of times when Indigenous people rise up, society gets a little bit scared because that Indigenous people rising up represents, you know, this country holding a mirror up to itself of what it did to the first peoples of these lands. And I think that that's scary to a lot of people. But I think that more and more that this becomes more and more visible, and the more and more people begin to understand what our movement is fighting for, I'm seeing more and more people extend their hand and saying, how do I join, you know, the land back movement? How do I join the movement for Indigenous people to fight for their land, for their freedom, and for their liberation? And I think we're in a time that these protests and these actions and these strategies that we're doing, it is creating a conversation in this country. That if this country is going to begin to get right with its past, it can't get right with its past unless it deals with Indigenous people and its relationship with Indigenous people, and particularly its relationship between Indigenous people, the land, the water, and the environment, because that's what we're fighting to protect. And so I think that grassroots organizing all across this country and every kind of direct action that's taking place from Line 3 to the stuff that Pueblo Action Alliance is doing, to what's happening in the Sacred Heysapa, to what what the Carvers have done, that all of those things actually add to a broader narrative of transforming this country and fighting for a better future for Indigenous people. And it's calling people in, and it's holding a mirror up to this country at a very important time as this country is determining what its future looks like. And I think that Indian country and frontline community activism is part of what is informing that to happen.
Well, thank you so much for that, Nick. And we are getting to the end of our hour today, talking about sacred site protection and Lummi Totem Pole, raising awareness of a number of different issues. And Reyes, I wanted to give you a moment for your final thought.
Thank you. Well, first, I just want to say thank you for even uplifting, you know, the Red Road Totem Pole journey. And thank you to the Lummi Carvers, Native Organizers Alliance, and all the entire organizations and community members that came together to support. You know, a lot of these sacred sites that were on the map to get to D.C., they're in very rural locations. You know, so people drove far from, you know, from outside of their community to these sacred sites. You know, to give their prayers and send their blessings to continue on that journey. And so I just want to, you know, thank everybody who had a hand in making sure that, you know, these stories and these
the fight was ultimately uplifted. And, you know, I just want to also share, you know, that there's a place for everybody in this work, you know, whether it's at home and you're, you know, talking with your relatives about it, because in this work, you know, not everybody can be on that front line or be at protests. And I think it's important to, you know, remind all of our relatives that, you know, there are different ways, you know, that they can take part and, you know, learn and unlearn, because that's really what needs to happen, you know, in order to build capacity and mobilize for our people.
Right. I got to jump in because we're heading out here today on Native America Calling. And also thank you so much, Jewel James. Good thoughts your way. And to the Lummi Nation, the Lummi Carvers. You've been listening to Native America Calling. We got another show for you tomorrow. Tune in. Give us a call. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Looking to get your high school diploma? Southwestern Indian Polytechnic Institute offers Native Americans ages 18 or older training and preparation courses for the high school equivalency diplomas, in person and online, beginning September 6th. This no-charge program includes testing fees, and other resources will be available to help with supplies and living expenses. Space is limited. Application deadline is August 6th. More by calling 505-382-4287 or at sipi.edu, who support this show.
Ah, chest spook a neat. Stamp loot narsin met matins to aim. Easy to loot Washington, talks to talk lech luna talkwets wheat. Meach stin talks e poot loot lua achentis luel and crispy outin, she eats. Colnectus meat, chocol tausis to skelly suk mariam yach sakam. Chuimit healthcare.gov, uquach chocol tausin, 1-800-318-2596. Hiets me meat and centers qual Medicare and Medicaid services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.